Hey everybody, this is Jesse Case. Welcome to another episode of Case in Point. I'm slurring my speech like I've had too much to drink. I don't drink, so that's not the case. Anyway.
In point.
Yes. I drink lots of Pepsi. And this is episode 54. And I got Ponch with me today. We didn't record last week because I was having some weird allergy kind of breathing things. That's kind of hard to talk when you're kind of like gasping for breath. So we're in good shape now. And I got Ponch here with me. And like I've already stated.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. So the last time we got together, Ponch, we're going to go over like your perspective of like the 90s comic scene, and in particular your friendship with me when we first met, and we were hanging out stuff, and we were I was into Spider-Man, all the Spider-Man titles and everything, and you were heavy into the X-Men stuff. And before we really dig into that real quick, I just wanted to shout out a few podcasts here. We would like to say hi to the McSauce Boys at the McSauce Podcast. They were giving us some pretty nice plugs in the their realm of things, and we appreciate that. And check those guys out, and you can find them on Twitter, Facebook, Spotify. They're on all the major streaming outlets, Apple Music, whatever. And check them out. Check out Fireside Chat, Ryan McCormick. He's a good friend of the show, and I'll have him back on here soon. I haven't asked him yet, but now he knows if he's listening to this. So at some point down the road, I don't know when that is, we might be doing more collaboration with some of the other shows. And there's some different clients out there that I'm looking at to see if we could do that. Brady Bunch style or Hollywood Square style, where you can have all the people on there. And we have Shadow Stevens, you know, and Shadow Stevens, Whoopi Goldberg. What are some of the other mainstays on Hollywood Squares?
Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay, everybody! You know, that's a terrible impression, but anyway. So, that being said, I hope that my voice is being picked up very well. And I think it is because I'm using the webcam and I'm not using a microphone, so... I'm batting 1,000 today, folks. I really am. And it's sad because it's 11 o'clock. It's not even, like, you know, late, you know. So, 11 in the a.m., that is. So, anyway, let's get going with the comic books.
His breakfast hasn't been digested yet.
Yeah, my... Exactly. So...
Anyway.
Anywho, yeah. So, Ponch, we were going to talk about some of the 90s era comic collecting. We had done a show previously... on the Case in Point podcast about, and it's called Comics Plus. So if you want to go reach it in the archives, I don't know if it's like episode 15 or something like that, but our episode count's a little low because our output is not optimum, but we're fixing that now. And so I talked about some of my time as a employee of a comic store, and also talked about some experiences as a collector in the 90s, and I think I may have touched... Yeah, I know you were mentioned in there, Ponch, at least a few times. And so, how about you... I know what you're thinking, man.
You jerk.
Go ahead. Let's hear your side of the story.
Burying me and stuff, man.
Bury him online.
So you want me to talk about collecting in the 90s then, or?
Yeah, or kind of like our interactions. I mean, what were you, I was into the Spider-Man stuff. You were really heavy into the X-Men. You were a big Image guy. I think you were a Savage Dragon fan. You were a Rob Liefeld fan, maybe?
No, I think it was more into
Spawn,
like, yeah,
right?
Spawn and Wildcats.
Wildcats, that's funny.
I did like, what was that guy's, Shadowhawk?
Oh, is that the guy with the silver armor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he was in the budget bin in the back of the comic store.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that and from like the starting seven or whatever they call themselves, the Image Seven, I don't know. Yeah,
they actually had that, ones. Huh? Yeah, wow. You're going to be more well-versed in the Image lore than I am, because I largely disregarded them because I was just Marvel guy, so.
Well, I mean, as a Marvel guy, I figured you would have been into Image too, because all those guys are Marvel. They all broke away from Marvel.
I was 12 years old. I was ignorant of the inner workings of the comic industry. Yes.
Come on.
I ate the sausage. I didn't know how it was made.
Yeah, I like knowing how the sausage was made too. It made eating it a lot better too. But anyway, but I think I was maybe, yeah, well, when I was into X-Men, because I think actually the first comic I remember buying for myself was X-Force 12, I think. I don't remember the exact issue number, but it had like a close-up of like Cable's face all torn up, and you see all the cybernetics and the mechanical hardware that made up his face underneath his skin and stuff, and I don't remember who the artist was, like Dan Pandosian or however you say his name. But I think the artist they had before, Greg Capullo.
I've heard of him actually. Yeah.
But yeah, that was the first comic that I ever bought for myself. I mean, I was given comics before that, but that I bought with my own money. That was the first one. But that was, I think it was still riding off the whole Liefeld hangover at that time. But X-Men with the Jim Lee one with like 4 or 5 different covers and stuff. But it was between those two and a little bit of Spider-Man from you, but definitely a lot of Image too. You
know, yeah.
Like we were just saying, Spawn. I think Spawn was the first Image comic published, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, Spawn, Wildcats, Shadow, Shadowhawk, whatever his name was.
And don't forget Wetworks.
when it was released, because I think it 3 issues were released within like a 5-year period or something like that. That was super delayed, man. But and then also like Gen 13 with J. Scott Campbell, I liked him a lot.
Yeah, of course you did.
Yeah, shut up, man.
Pervert comic. Just kidding.
I was trying to improve my drawing craft, okay?
Okay, you get a pass on that one. I can't speak for others who didn't do artwork.
But, anyway. But, it was those comics. I also remember, going back to X-Men, it was like Jim Lee X-Men and the Uncanny X-Men. I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, I think those are all the major ones that I was into at the time. For me, I really started getting into other stuff towards like the mid to late 90s when, you know, like Image became more than just what it first started off as. We had like a lot of like the other, like that imprint called Cliffhanger, where you had the Joe Madureira Battle Chasers, and then the J. Scott Campbell had Danger Girl, and then Humberto Ramos had some teen vampire comic thing, whatever.
Sounds lame.
Yeah, it was. Then around that same time on the Marvel end, it was still X-Men, but I started getting into a lot of Spider-Man. Started getting into Avengers when I think Bendis, actually, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, around that time, I think Geoff Johns and Bendis wrote Avengers at that time. I think Kurt Busiek did too.
I remember him.
Yeah.
I wonder when Sir Lazerlot was entering.
Who?
I wonder when Sir Lazerlot was entering his mind. Oh. Just kidding. I had to throw that in there.
Yeah. Nice, man. Nice. Real smooth. trying to think what else. I think at that time I was really like, I wasn't like super hardcore into Image as much as I am say now, but I think also, not that I grew up much with DC, I knew of DC, but I didn't get a lot of stuff, like a lot of comics from them as I did Marvel. But started getting into, because of like your brother, I started getting into Batman a little bit, some Green Lantern, but not terribly too much.
Well, you know what's crazy? It's like the Batman stuff, they've never had bad comics. The Batman stuff, the writing has always been rock solid, you know? And that's the thing, is that's one of those comic books I can honestly say never went bad. Can't say that for anything else, though.
Yeah, like Superman. I think I tried to get into Superman at the time.
Wasn't jacked. Pretty bad stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Although I think around that same time, too, Grant Morrison started writing JLA, I think. And that was really good.
I don't think Justice League ever really had a rough patch either. They might have had some weaker issues, but I don't think it was ever anything horrible. Because, I mean, Spider-Man got pretty lame. And I know you'll disagree with the whole Ben Reilly thing, but that Scarlet Spider... Scarlet Spider was something where I had tapped out by then. So what they did was they had the Maximum Carnage crossover, which was okay. It started to lose its legs when they hooked up Deathlok to that machine, that Sonic machine, and turned him into a laser with legs or whatever. And that's when I knew the time was running out. They brought in that stupid... Who's that chick? Siren, I think her name was. Or Shriek. Shriek, I think.
His relative, is it?
What's that?
Was it like a female banshee? Like his relative?
Yeah,
Siren, I think.
Siren.
I think. Okay. Is that her name?
Well, we all know that Carrion was involved. And he, you know, I think that he had that... And he had the men's carry-all that he kept with him. So maybe Carrion and Carrion were, you know, maybe that was an inside joke naming that, but he could kill people by just touching them, but I think Sticks and Stone covered that. But anyway, these are bad pulls, everybody.
Yeah.
That was a comic that was so bad. Mark Bagley did the cover art, but didn't see fit to do the art internally. But anywho, yeah, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man had some okay runs for a while. And then it was just kind of, you had the Jackal, and then you had that idiot called the Traveler, and I'm like, this is stupid. And then you guys were going, Marvel bought Fleer, so they had all those Fleer covers, style covers with like the metallic, it's the holographic cover, it's the metallic foil cover, it's the hologram cover, and it just got too much for me. I'm like, this is stupid. They're totally trying to cater to the collector people that are at this point think everything's valuable and they got to put everything in, you know, like, I don't think they had slabs at that point back then, but it was, everything was valuable despite the fact that it was so overproduced. And, you know, it just got too much for me and it was a real turnoff. I started to get older too and I'm like, well, there's music out there, and get more into like listening to music. And I was collecting sports cards. It kind of left the whole comic thing behind. I got sick of it. Mm-hmm. And that was... I was in a dead zone. Even when I had some... I bought some comics at the comic store that I worked at. But even then, it was like I was more into music and stuff. And, I bought that Kiss Psycho Circus comic, which was terrible.
Oh, goodness.
It had some cool art. The story was just total garbage. So I bought that one, Battle Chasers, and then that stopped all of a sudden because the artist, I don't know, he just wasn't consistent with his releases. There's this really crappy comic called Warlands. I like the art in that, but that one was kind of lost its legs. And I was totally into music at that point, like Dream Theater and Yngwie Malmsteen, and just more music at that point, even then. Lots of European power metal and that kind of thing, you know. Century Media, you know, records, and the record label had the mail order and things like that. But so comics for me in the late 90s was largely kind of there, but not really. But you never let up on that.
No.
Because you're an art guy.
Mm-hmm. In fact, while you're talking just now, I start remembering more comics that I was into at the time. I remember, at least with the Marvel stuff, they had some like pretty fun crossovers. Like I remember X-Men, like the X-Men centric one, they had a Executioner song where it overlapped the two X-Men's, like X-Men Uncanny, and then you also had the X-Factor and X-Force. It spanned like 16 issues between those four titles. And I remember my favorite crossover of all time was the Age of Apocalypse, where they basically put a halt to all the X-Men comics for maybe 4 months to half a year, I think, where like Legion, Charles Xavier's son went back in time to try to kill Magneto, so that his rationale is he wanted his father to have a better shot at, you know, having his dream of like human and mutant relations to have a better chance of happening. But instead of King Magneto, he killed Professor X, and the world, it was basically like a giant what if story where if Professor X never existed, Apocalypse unleashed his philosophy of like mutants, you know, being the superior race, and then, you know, it was a cool storyline. There was some stuff that sucked, but overall it was pretty neat, where like you had stuff that happened from that comic that lasted for a long time, like that Dark Beast guy hung around the real X-Men universe for a while. That that Blink character,
which character?
It was a character called Blink. She had
I don't remember her
skin. She's basically like the telepath.
Okay, did she have hair?
Yeah, it was like green hair, I think.
How about that? You know, I'm reminded of that chick with green hair called Polaris.
No, yeah. Not her.
No, but what was her deal? What was Polaris's powers?
Some sort of magnetic based powers, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think she's Magneto's daughter.
Yeah, because I thought she was relatively pretty powerful.
Yeah, maybe like similar power sets to Magneto. I don't remember exactly, but that's what I remember.
Well, because like what, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are supposed to be his offspring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some sort of relation between them. I can't remember offhand. I don't feel like. Well, maybe I should look it up, but.
You don't have... No, it's not necessary.
All right.
I
also remember the whole Onslaught crossover. I think that was more late 90s. Some stuff was cool from it, but... I have fun reading it, but it just seemed like the crossovers, at least for Marvel in the 90s, it seemed more fun versus now. It's more like a... It's almost like an event type of thing now, where you have a crossover that's going on that's not even finished yet, and already a teasing for the next event crossover that's going to happen later on in the year. So it didn't seem as special as it was then. It wasn't like a big deal. Or most to me don't. Some do, like probably the most recent one. Go back to the 90s in a bit, but like the most recent storyline or crossover that like Marvel had was that the Secret Wars a few years ago. That was a lot of fun. That reminded me a lot of like the crossovers from the 90s. But yeah.
Well, that was part of my thing though, is like I thought the X-Men had a lot of cool characters, X-Force, X-Factor, all that stuff. It was neat that they had all these characters had different powers. I think one thing that didn't attract me so well was that, number one, it was a bloated cast. You had all these people, and it's like, well, what's this guy doing? What's his story? Why is he involved? What are his powers? Why does he not... He looks kind of stupid, but he's got cool powers. But I, you know, some of the character design wasn't what I would have went for. It found palpable as a kid. Mm-hmm. I tended to be more superhero-centric look kind of guy. But then in the 90s, they're trying to be all... alternative rock, and like we're gonna have this guy show up that has mutant powers, but he's gonna be wearing flannel shirt and work boots and dress like Neil Young at his Unplugged session, you know.
Goodness.
And the whole grunge thing was in, and the alternative music, alternative rock was pretty high, you know. Or if it was the hip hop thing, he'd have a gold chain and he'd have a hairdo like that kid from the Burger King Kids Club, you know. And like the kid and play hairdo, you know. So I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't want any part of this. Because the comics are trying to be catered to the hip and trendy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say for the time. And that lost it for me. I was like into the, this really 87 run of Captain Atom and Superman and Batman. I wasn't interested in the more pop look kind of thing. That's still a very big part of the comic industry, what's left of it. And yeah, so and I think that with shops taking a hit right now, I mean, and that this is a separate show altogether, but someone had said, yeah, comic shops, the private ones are taking a hit right now, and with like physical copies, we'll see what happens. But
yeah.
Anyway, I like more of the traditional superhero type stuff, and when it started straying from that, I got out of it. I don't want to see electric blue and electric red Superman. I don't want to see some B-rate character from Image called Jock Itch or whatever. They come up with these weird characters like Pitt and Max. And, I mean, where's the staying power of these characters now? They're gone. Because they were garbage to begin with. Superman's still around. Batman's still around. Your core DC people are still around. Deathlok isn't around. Death's Head isn't around.
Death's Head. And they came out with a 2 and a 3 of that, too.
Yeah. And it's like, really? I don't think Spawn's around anymore.
No, he is.
He is? So he... Okay, so, oh, like, he's around, fine, because I'm ignorant, because I don't follow him. But I mean, the thing is, I guess my point is that a lot of these characters that run in the 90s aren't even being written into the comics anymore, because they're just garbage. And a lot of it was to get characters thrown together to sell more comic books.
Yeah, 90s were definitely a time of gimmicks.
Yeah, exactly. Bloat the ranks. And I hate to say it, but X-Men was cool from its inception, but it fell prey to a lot of the overexpansion of the ranks. And a lot of these characters, like, that just don't really matter, you know.
Yeah. I remember two mutants that were just too old. Out of the many mutants that they created towards, like, the mid to late 90s, excuse me, there were two that I just thought were just complete dumb, complete stupid. There's a guy named Maggot, where he had these, like, metallic-looking slugs. And essentially what they were was an extension of his intestines, because whatever...
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's like wherever they would crawl and digest, he would get fed by it. It's like, yeah, that's a cool power.
That's terrible. I'll take Power Pack over that guy.
It's dumb. And there was another character. Her name was Marrow, I think. Or, you know, like bone marrow.
So yeah, she had like terrible.
These like crazy bone growths coming out of her back. And she would pull them, and they would become, like, weapons that she would use. It's
dumb. Oh, jeez.
So, but, yeah, I'm glad the execution may not have been the greatest, but early 2000s, they had a crossover called House of M, where Scarlet Witch just went crazy and reduced the, using her, like, chaos powers or whatever, she reduced the mutant population down to hundreds, because, I don't remember exactly what happened in that storyline, but
did she use her probability powers to do that? Like her what do you call it? Her jinxes to do that?
Something like that. I think now her power is called chaos magic or something like that.
So, yeah, they got to change it up now. It's not Magic the Gathering now. It's Magic Chaos. I don't.
Magic the Fellowship.
Magic the Fellowship. Yeah, the Fellowship of bad gimmicks and. You know, the poor man's Flash, Quicksilver.
Fantastical abilities, the Fellowship.
Yeah. So, I liked, in retrospect, not at the time, I did like the early West Coast Avengers with, like, I like them now because they're not considered very good. You've got the Silver Centurion Armor Iron Man, which is Rhodes. It was Rhodey, right? It wasn't Tony Stark. Vision, like the early Vision, that's the multicolored one. You had that Tigra lady. She was like subpar, but she was just part of the group, which is fine. Wonder Man, who was Simon, what's that guy's last name?
Oh, Wonder Man?
Yeah, Wonder Man, but his name is Simon Phillips, I think. Something like that. I know there's a musician, Simon Phillips. He plays drums. But I don't remember his last name. I always forget. Simon Wright was his name, I think.
For some reason, I was getting confused with the Great Lakes Avengers.
They had a Great Lakes chapter?
Yeah, man.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not going to even talk about them.
They're like the Reject Avengers, man.
Yeah, who'd they have? Friggin' Puck in there from Alpha Flight?
No. Shoot, I don't... There was a dude that... I think one guy was... I can't remember names, but there was one guy that was, like, flat. He was kind of like Mr. Fantastic, but if he became flat and never, regained his regular human form. And there was another dude where... I think his name might have been, like... An Eternity Man or something like that, where he can never die. Well, he dies, but then he comes back. Something like that.
Oh, boy. The Great Lakes Avengers, huh?
Yeah. Look him up. It's...
Earth 616?
Yeah.
What kind of crap is that?
Well, you know how DC has their multiverse?
Base, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
First appearance, West Coast Avengers, number 46, July 1989. Okay, Mr. Immortal...
Yeah, that's his name, Mr. Immortal.
Big Bertha, Doorman, Flatman, Good Boy. this is terrible. Dude, it gets worse.
And I think Squirrel Girl might have originated from one of the Great Lakes
Avengers. Yep, so it's number... She was in number 2, July 2005. So that's why I'm largely ignorant of this, because I didn't even read comics in the mid-2000s. I didn't get back into, like, even... I'm a casual status guy, okay? Because I've once again canceled my... Back in March, right before all the quarantine crap hit. I had actually... And it was, I guess, prophetic in a way. I knew that I was going to have to stop doing this because I was just done. I was just done with buying more comic books. It's just ridiculous. For $3.99 each, I can read them in 5 seconds. And I just got tired of it. What I did was just real quick, is I got back into comic books because I wanted to get some older comics in the 50-cent bins at a local shop, okay? And it started to take on a life where, okay, well, I'll start getting some newer comics to kind of catch up and see where things are at. And I would just get the Masters of the Universe stuff, and and the crossover stuff with Thundercats. And then what happened was, like, I said, well, I'll get a pull box to make sure I get everything. Well, then they started putting things in there that I really wouldn't have picked up myself off the shelf. But I'm like, well, they're in here, and I'll just fine. That's fine. Well, then you're getting into a $60 bill easy every time you're going in there. And a couple of times I told them, I said, listen, I only want these titles in there. And then for a few months, they were good. And then I find new stuff in there, which I appreciate them thinking of me and putting it in there. I really do. And I miss being a patron, but... Right after that, everything went south as far as, like, everything's, like, quarantine or whatever. So it kind of worked out that way, and I'm glad I did it. I felt a big sense of relief because it's just a lot of money for stuff I really don't care about. I liked all the Action Comics 1000, Detective Comics 1000, and the build-up to that, and that's really what I focused on. But there was stuff in there, like, I got, like, IDW... stuff. I had, like, some Big Trouble in Little China comics, and I quit getting those because they just got stupid, and just things like that, and I'm just like, this isn't really even an investment, because no one cares about comic books anymore as far as print, and the people that do read them prefer to read them on a tablet or a little dinky friggin' phone or whatever, so I stopped doing it, and I was getting the $5 comics, the compilation ones they sell in Walmart. It's the 100-page specials that DC puts out. Yeah. I was getting those, but I'm not going to Walmart right now because of obvious reasons. So, really, I'm reverted back to getting old comics again. Like, I was supposed to go in New York. I was going to be in New York in August and go to it's a comic show that's in Connecticut. It's the Terrificon. And that didn't happen. And so I was going to purchase tickets, and then everything went south, and they're like, Dad, you better not, you know. So I'm not going to be in New York this year. So everything fell apart. And so I'm going to probably fill out my Superman collection as far as the Action Comics, and probably all the way up until maybe like the early 90s, and then stop with them. Because I like the Jerry Ordway stuff and that kind of thing. You know, I like that. Like, stuff that's pre-Death of Superman is where I'll stop. I'll fill that in. Got all my Wonder Woman stuff that I want, like 87 and up. Captain Atom, 87 and up, covered. I'm going after that stuff. I'm going to rebuy a lot of the comics I don't have in decent condition of Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, and Spectacular Spider-Man. Yeah. So I'll go after those, but that's all going to be 80s and probably up to 1993, and I'm stopping. And that's it. I'm done. Because the comic thing has just gotten out of hand, and I just don't want to... It's just... not something that I'm really that interested in at this point, as far as stuff. I got into Batman Who Laughs, try to track those down. I'm missing a few issues, and I really like what they were doing in Detective Comics. I was really enjoying it a lot, and also in the Superman stuff, but it just, when does it stop? When does it end? And when is it enough? And for me, I can't have 50 long boxes in my house, because I collect a lot of other things, so I decided to set limits on my comic purchases, and you can't have it all, so anyway, yeah, I got off on a tangent, but yeah, anyway, the Great Lakes Avengers, huh? Tippy Toe, Grasshopper, Monkey Joe, Deadpool's in there, yeah.
He's in everything I get.
Yeah, my brother had the original Deadpool miniseries in 1991. Well before it was cool to like Deadpool, so... You know, my brother was ahead of the curve. He always was on comic books, man. He likes all the stuff that's actually, like, legit, you know. And he's always been... Really had a leg up and had a really, really... He knows the biz, and he knows the cool stuff to be into, you know, with that, and... I've always been a shotgun guy where I'm just like, well, maybe I'll try this, maybe I'll try that. And he's always been, this is what I'm doing, this is the good stuff, and he never deviated from that. And I've said that before, and I think it's really cool. Like, he's got that massive checklist of Batman stuff that he's zeroing in on what he wants. I think it's awesome. So, now, remember that I had a small collection of Spider-Man comics that you and I...
here we go.
And it's not this is not a dig. It's not a dig because we were kids. Now I will spin this in a way that remember we went to that place? We went to that camp and we were in the Royal Rangers camp and there was that kid that had those comics. I don't remember the kid's name. His name was like Kip or something like that, but he's like, he was trying to hoodwink people into trading his Venom comics for, like, a lot of really good comic books. I'm trying to think what it was, but it was, he had the Chuck Dixon holographics cover of Venom number one, and it was the orange, kind of really wild 90s holographics cover I remember he had. And there was a variation of it I'd find in the 50-cent bin where it was a turquoise version, but it's when they were doing all those Venom mini series, like a 60 steel or five. And this isn't Lethal Protector. This is like Chuck Dixon fodder.
Oh, it was after Lethal Protector.
Yeah, and they really tried to capitalize on doing all these mini series. And I remember there was a lot of like side hustles going on in the 90s for comic books. It's the best way I could put it, you know. What were your memories of that time period?
Those campouts were like black market for us for comic trade.
Exactly. There's a lot of side hustles. Hey, listen, man, I got this execution song. It's been open, but I have the bag and the card.
This is funny. I bring my comics. You bring your comics. Jason, he never brought his stuff.
Who never brought it?
Jason.
Yeah, because he's smart. He knew a bad deal when he saw it. Unlike us. You know, we're so enthusiastic.
It was not like we were training for money. We were just training for other comics. It's just, we were stupid as far as like making sure we got even trades.
Oh yeah. he's a smart cat, man. He had it already figured out even at the age of 12. Yeah. And when there was a bad deal going on.
He did trade me all of his X-Men comics. I don't remember why I gave him in return, though. I feel bad about not remembering, though. But I remember
for a while. Did you blot it out of your memory? Is that what you did?
Yeah, that's what it was.
No.
So traumatic. Goodness, why am I even here?
No. Did you go into, like, Black Castle Comics? Did you go in there? Remember them?
Wait.
They were on the square in Watertown across from Mr. Sub.
Oh yeah, I think I was only there like once or twice, like that.
They lost their inventory. They couldn't pay their bills. All those comics were in there, and you could look through the window. It was just the daylight to cast a slight glimmer onto the boxes, the displays along the wall, because it was a long shop, and they would just have it. It was like remember when. Like, they used to have those really small newspaper shops, and you could go in and get newspapers and comic books, too?
Yeah, the Penny Saver or whatever.
Yeah. Well, but they would have, like, remember the Watertown? There was this place in the Paddock Arcade, and it was a newspaper place. Dude, they had this room in the back that was all comic books. And my sister took me in there, and I got a bunch of Excalibur comics, which would have, like, the Black Panther in as, like, one of the backstories in there. And she got me Excalibur, and then she got me, I think it was like there was some kind of dystopia, like post-apocalyptic Earth comic that I got. And I don't remember what it was, but I thought it was like the coolest thing. It had 80s written all over it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was like the 80s, like futuristic punk thing with, you know, like everyone's got like improvised shanks and really stuff that like kids shouldn't be reading. Really like that whole cyborg thing. But at any rate, so Black Castle Comics, I went in there once, and all I remember is that they had the Spectacular Spider-Man issue had just come out where Rhino has Spider-Man in, like, a sleeper hold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that issue was there, and I was like, I was so broke. And, I was just like, why am I even in here? I don't even have any money to buy these things. Well, what it was is we would go in there and find what we wanted and then beg our mom to go give us So it was advanced shopping, you know, window shopping, so to speak.
You were scouting.
We were scout partner. And that's all I really remember. And I remember, like, they didn't even have the lights on in there. The lighting was just from the street, that window.
Yeah. I was just thinking that. I remember the few times I went in there, I don't think I ever saw any lights on other than, like, whatever was coming up from the windows. It was just...
Yeah, and it had that mural on there. It said Black Castle. It was just a single black tower.
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
Chess piece or something.
Yeah, and it was next to this insurance place. And it was a hole in the wall. And then, the guy... Remember, there was this guy playing... His job was to sit there at the Sonic Spinball machine and promote Sonic Spinball. Wearing this Sega jacket, like this really cheap foam jacket, and it was made out of that material that you'd find when you buy appliances, and it's got that thin foam sheet that goes around things to protect the screens, or like things that could scratch easily. His jacket was made out of it, and had a zipper, and it had a Sonic the Hedgehog thing on it, and it was very taut, because he wasn't in very good shape. And
or maybe he made it that way.
Yeah.
Maybe
some kind of Sega representative, and he was a member of the USS North Country fan club. Star Trek TNG was big at the time.
And there did you ever talk about that in the show yet?
I did. We touched on it a little bit on the last time on Comics Plus, I think it was. Oh, and I think we made a two-parter out of that. But So we go in there, and he's like, this isn't KB Toys. And he's got this, they had a small CRT set up, and at the time we didn't call it CRT because it's just a television. But you could play Sonic Spinball, and he would sit there and watch you play it. Creepy. And my brother would get, like, up so high, or I'd get so far in the game, and he'd be going, oh, you know, he'd do that. Oh, like, try and feign interest in what you're playing, and, like, you're that good, you know, to try and build your confidence to buy the game. And he goes, we got talking about this U.S. North Country fan club, and they had some party, and they tried to, they tried to invite us somehow, and they got to my mom or something, tried to invite my brother and I, and we just laughed it off, and my brother's like, yeah, they got their phasers on the ship or duct tape to it, and their hand phasers, you know, they don't have like a real phaser array or phaser banks. It's like a real piece of crap. If they had a ship, this is what it would look like. We got laughing so bad. It's still really funny. And the guy's like, oh yeah, I went to it. Yeah, great party, like that. And then he started telling us about Black Castle Comics. He said, yeah, their bills came due, and they couldn't pay their rent, so they had to just vacate. All their stock got left in there as partial payment.
Wow.
So he goes, if you can pay the rent, you can get all those comic books. Now, he could have been throwing us some huge yarn because we were kids. Okay, we were like 12 or 13. But the deal was that, and we walked by there. Because I think our mom had to go to the credit union, which was nearby. Mm. And we went in and looked in the window. We just quickly went around the corner. So my brother and I would sneak around all over the place and snoop around. My mom was trying to do something. And we were like, check it out, check this out. And we always go, like, we're explorer kids, you know, that's what we did. And so we go look in the building, and all the comics are in there. Like, everything's left in place. The register is right there. And they'd leave the register by the window so they could actually see the keys as they're typing everything up. And it was, I don't ever know what happened to it, but it was insane. I mean, now, honestly, I would think the owners of the building would get claim to all those comic books. Because if you're kicked out and you're evicted, well, you're gone. And what you leave is what you leave. And I think that they're like, we're just going to leave these because they're brand new comics. They're not worth anything because they're brand new and whatever. So, yeah, that was a story on that. And then you had the, which I know is defunct now, is Pegasus Hobbies.
Oh, it's not there anymore?
I don't know if the guy is in business anymore. I'd have to Google it or whatever. But that guy always had the IRS after him.
Yeah, he always had his stuff overpriced anyway. I mean, yeah, it seemed like he had, like, friggin' Holy Grail there when all the stuff was collecting dust and rotting away. He always had sob stories. I don't think I ever went in. The only time, not that I went there a lot, but the only time I didn't hear a sob story was, I'm assuming it was his son or some other dude was working there. And that dude wasn't, he was just as much of a jerk as the guy who usually ran the place anyway. Yeah, I don't think I even bought much there. I was just,
it looks like there's a Facebook page.
Wow. Surprised you even got that much, that working.
I don't think it's up anymore. I think it's defunct.
You know, it makes me wonder with what's going on right now. Like you touched on it a little bit, like a lot of, like, most if not all comic shops, they're not considered essential business, so they had to close for now. But like, I remember soon after that, Diamond Distributors announced that they weren't going to be distributing any new comics. So I think DC.
Right, that's what they were, yeah, I read the same thing. Like, this is going to put a hurting on, because Diamond's like the big dookaroo.
Right. So I think this week, if either this past week or next week, DC's starting to roll out with some physical comics, not like the entire line, but like, you know, like the Batman, the Superman, the major hits. And I mean, I guess they're still publishing graphic novels and stuff. I guess things that were already in the pipeline before all this stuff went down. But I think DC, what they're doing is they want they're distributing the stuff there on, you know, by themselves, not through Diamond or any other third party. So it makes me wonder, like, if Marvel, Image, and the other, well, any publishers that can afford to distribute stuff themselves, if that's what they're going to do from now on. Because, like you're saying, Diamond is pretty huge. And once they said they weren't going to distribute anything for anybody, it's kind of like, well, even though the comic shops were closed, I remember at least here in New York, you know, like in Manhattan, you have Midtown Comics. And for a while, even after the stores closed, they were still, you know, they still intend on having like new comics shipped through their website. So instead of obviously going to the comic shops, you'd have to order online and then it gets delivered to you. And then once Diamond did what they, you know, announced what they did, they kind of stopped with that too and just stuck with the, you know, graphic novels that are being released and whatever collectible stuff that's being released. But it makes me wonder, like, what's going to happen, you know, from here on out, like, once things hopefully come back to some sort of normalcy and stores start opening again, like, if, like, with major public, like, comic companies, if they're going to start distributing their own stuff so they don't have to go through Diamond again. And then also with, like, digital comics, at least in my experience, and for me, I still prefer physical comics, because right. I'm just a, you know, I just like tangibility. I like to, and digital comics are convenient, and you can get way more comics and just fit it in a tiny space. That's how much he cares about this.
Sorry.
That was nice, though. So I gave that much. But to me, there's like an experience. I don't know if it's like ritualistic, but just the idea of like going to the comic shop, buying the comics, having it put in like the brown paper bag, taking it home, cracking it open, you know, spending however long to read them all. You can't really get that with digital. So I mean, I'm interested in seeing how the comics industry is gonna come back after this, whether they're gonna, I hope they still publish physical comics, like even before the, you know, like some people in the industry was announcing a death knell for like physical comics. For me, I always saw digital and physical going hand in hand, where I think like with Marvel comics, at least, I think DC did this too, where you bought a comic, you get a digital code so you can get that, a digital version of that comic so you can read whatever, wherever. I kind of like that joint relationship, and I hope right. that continues, because there's still, even though there is a definite decline in like purchases of like physical copies, I still hope it's still around, because there's still collectors out there. They still like to collect, whether it's for, you know, filling up their long boxes or for stupid speculation, FOMO, whatever. But I think there's still a market for that. I think there is. But yeah, either way, it's just going to be interesting to see how, you know, what happens in the next few months. And also, you know, like San Diego announced a week or so ago that they're not going to do San Diego Comic Con this year. And so it makes me wonder if New York Comic Con is going to postpone their show this year. And you know,
I know PowerCon is for toy collecting they do largely Thundercats and He-Man, but they didn't cancel theirs, they postponed it, but the non-attendee pre-orders are still going to be going forward. You know, the five pack of Masters of the Universe Origins, but anyway, it's a separate episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did, going along with that, I did read somewhere, at least with San Diego, some of the at least with toy companies that would have exclusives at that show, they're gonna now, well, they're throwing around the idea of having those exclusives that we would have had available at San Diego, having be like an online exclusive instead. So at least, even though there is no show to buy them, you can still have a chance of buying them. Kind of like, I guess, how like online shops like Limited Run Games, when they do have games up for sale,
I keep forgetting about
it. Day, and there's a small window, window that you can go on the website and buy the stuff before it gets sold out for that, you know, period of time. So that'd be kind of neat if they do that. So at least we can still buy stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll have to do an episode on homebrew and that kind of stuff. So we'll have to check that out and maybe have a little discussion about that kind of format of purchasing games. I know there's probably some people that might not be into video games. I'm not a hardcore collector myself. I don't collect games. I play them. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, but that's a separate deal. So
Yeah. Well, I think that buying system can be applied to like toys or, you know, anything like that, because it's kind of like with what Mattel did with Snake Mountain or the Jabba's ship. That's a very nice Boba Fett. Wait, is that the Black Series or the 3.5?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a 6-inch.
So, I think they can buy that to toys very easily.
I have all the bounty hunters sitting up here. I've got Dengar, Zookas, Forlom, Bossk, and Boba Fett, and an IG-88. Actually, I think it's the other IG from the... No, it's IG-88. It's the Archive Edition where it's in the clamshell. Oh. I open them all. I don't freaking care.
Let them breathe.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, come on. Jeez. They're gifts, you know. Anyway. We'll wrap this up here. We're at the 50-minute mark, but I just, real quickly, all pocket organizers aside, I think that it's kind of neat that you stuck with the comic thing this long, and you kind of never gave up, and you're able to do that with toy collecting and the video game stuff. I think it's pretty cool, and it's part of one of the reasons you bring a lot to the show. Okay. So your fandom is something to marvel at, no pun intended. And, I think it's cool. So it's neat that we're still talking about comic books in 2020 here and coming up on the midway point of 2020. This has been a lot of fun. And folks, that's going to wrap it up for this episode 54. And Ponch, is there anything else you wanted to add?
Stay safe and stay healthy, I guess. Same nonsense you hear from all other outlets, but
yeah, right. All right, folks. Well, that's gonna do it, I guess. Yeah, till next time. So, all right, folks. You have a good one, and make sure you wash your hands after using the bathroom.